HSS to order. At this time, we have a full house today. All members are present. Senator Thomas, Senator Ellis, myself, Senator Davis, Vice Chair Senator Passban, and Senator Dyson. All present. Time is 1:33, that is. We have several bills coming before us today. The first bill that we're going to hear is House Bill 2, Birth Certificate for Stillborn. If you have any cell phones in the audience, we'd like for you to cut those off. And we can get started with the sponsor of this bill. Please come forward. Yes.
For the record, my name is Sandra Wilson, staff to Representative Gatto. First of all, he'd like to send his apologies for being unable to make it. He's currently on floor there in session. House Bill 2 allows parents who've had a stillborn children to get a birth certificate for that child. Currently, all they receive is a fetal death certificate. Parents who've had stillborn children go through the same labor as parents whose child takes their first breath. By being able to get a birth certificate for their child, it validates for the parents that they had a child. The certificate is completely optional, just like a birth certificate for parents whose child took their first breath. It has to be requested by that parent to get one. And there are currently 26 other states who have passed similar legislation as this. We just want to bring some closure to parents who've suffered this loss. We know that there's nothing we can do to completely get rid of it or anything, but it provides them with some sort of closure.
All right, thank you. Are there any questions of the sponsor? Yes, Senator Dice.
Yeah, thank you. My question is not an antagonistic one, and I'm unfamiliar a bit with the law. How long does a child need to live outside of the womb before the parents can claim either a tax deduction or a permanent fund dividend? Do you know?
I do not know the answer, but I know that as far as this is related, they aren't allowed to claim a tax deduction or PFD, and the birth certificate doesn't prove live birth, so it doesn't give any kind of rights to this. The birth certificate wouldn't allow the parents to get any of those. I know that they can't currently.
Thank you.
Is there anybody online to speak to you, Bill? Are you here in the room?
Michelle Hoyt is supposed to be online, but I don't know if she's...
That's legal?
No, she's a parent. Philip Mitchell from the Department of Vital Statistics is here if there are any questions for him.
Okay. I don't think that's a question that he'd want to answer. Any other question? Anyone else? Okay. We only have one person that signed up as far as I can see, and that is Phyllis Mitchell. She's from the department. And I can't tell if she's saying she's going to speak or just here for questions, I think. Is there anybody in the audience that want to speak to this bill? Off net, online, there, is there anyone? I hear no one, and this bill is quite simple. Could you tell me, please, I forgot your name that quick.
Sandra Wilson.
Wilson. Ms. Wilson, could you tell me what was the vote on this when it came from the House side?
It passed the House floor 29-1.
Okay, thank you. It's quite simple. If there was somebody to testify, I'd call on them. I don't have any other statements to be made. If it's okay with... Hello?
I just came online a little late. I'm sorry.
Are you Phyllis?
I'm Michelle Hoyt. Can I testify?
Yes, you may testify.
Thank you, committee. My name is Michelle Hoyt, representing myself and my family.
Okay.
My daughter, Haley Inez, was born to me on March 30th, 2004. I gave natural birth to her on that day. Granted, she was born dead, I still had to go through the birthing process. At the same time, I had to go through the grieving process also. Unfortunately, the state will only acknowledge that she died on that day. How can you have a death certificate without a birth certificate? Yet I had to experience the birthing process, the milk drying up, the baby fat, the depression, the going home with no child, the funeral arrangements right along with the hospital bills of having a child. I ask you to support this bill to bring closure to many grieving parents in that the state acknowledges a child was actually born to them, that their child was a human being and brought into this world like every other child around us. Granted, the grieving will never end, but at least we can have a positive piece of paper about our lost child. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Are there any questions from the committee? Hear none. Is there anyone else online that needs to speak to this bill? I'm checking through and I don't see I see a physical note, but it's zero. And I'm not sure where this bill goes next.
It goes to the Rules Committee.
Oh, it just had that one referral from us?
That's correct.
Okay. All right. What's the pledge of the committee?
Move it.
I need somebody to give a motion that we'll move this bill out of committee, please.
I would move that the CS for House Bill 2, identified as /P, be moved from this committee to the next committee of referral with individual recommendations and attached zero fiscal note.
I hear no objection, so moved, and we will take just a minute to sign for the bill to be moved. Thank you very much. Order, we have Senate Bill 139 to come before us now. Bill 139 has been heard before. It's the incentive for certain medical providers. Senator Oster.
Thank you, Madam Chairman, and members of the Health and Social Services Committee. My name is Donald Olson. I'm a senator from Nome, and just want to go ahead and thank you for hearing this bill again. It has to do with incentives for certain medical providers that are practicing here in the state of Alaska. And this incentive program is specifically designed to go ahead and recruit healthcare practitioners to areas of Alaska that are either underserved, in areas that are hard to fill, and for those patients, such as Medicare patients. And if we all live long enough, we know we're going to be there. This issue of not enough practitioner hurts all of Alaska, in particular those hard-to-fill places that I just spoke about. But what we've got, we have a solution to try and get something done to bring these practitioners back to Alaska on an immediate basis. As soon as this summer's match in July of this year, when the match is over from the residency programs, physicians will be ready to come out, ready to go out to places that they're going to be. 44 states already have loan repayments of this, of some type that is an incentive for their states, and we need to go ahead and step up to the plate as well. I think for those people that aren't necessarily in favor of the bill, I don't think they understand what the crisis that we are in already and that we're going to be heading for that's even more significant. Right now in the Nome Hospital, several years ago, they had 8 full-time staff. They are now down to 3 full-time staff. And because of that, everybody's scrambling for these temporary physicians to go out there, and the competition is getting overwhelming, not just from other hospitals throughout the state of Alaska, but from other hospitals in underserved areas with other places to practice throughout the whole United States. And so with that, I think that we're in a position where we need to go ahead and act fairly quickly, and I understand that there are other legislation that's being considered, but I think this is the most immediate way to go ahead and get some type of handle on and get an edge on those healthcare practitioners, not just physicians, dentists, and pharmacists, but also those ancillary healthcare people that are out there. And with that, I have Kendra Caesar, who's here, and she's going to be presenting a committee substitute to this bill. With your indulgence, Madam Chairman, I will have her explain the committee substitute.
Okay, before you do that, I'd like for someone to this is a new CS before us. Will somebody make a motion for us to accept it?
Sure. I would move that we bring CS for Senate Bill 139, identified as 26-LS0503/P, before this committee for purposes of discussion.
Okay, so move, and you may give your testimony on it now. I mean, your statement on the bill now.
Good afternoon. My name is Kendra Caesar, staff to Senator Olson. At the first hearing, I went to a lengthy description about the healthcare professions loan repayment and incentive program and how it would be run, which I'd be happy to do again at the committee's request. But as Senator Olson mentioned, I'd plan to first go through the CS with you and then give an opportunity to testifiers to address the concerns that were brought up at the first hearing. So if we could refer first to the CS version P, I'll explain the changes that were made, most of which were just clarifying changes to more accurately reflect the intent of the program.
Will you pull your microphone up just a little bit so we can I can hear a little better? Thank you.
On the first page, line 14, in regards to the administration of the loan repayments, the bill the CS reads, the commission shall act as disbursing agent. Commission refers to the Alaska Commission on Post-Secondary Education, and the original bill had read that the commission shall act as fiscal agent. We changed it to dispersing agent to clarify that the intent is not for the commission to act as the appropriating entity, and that the funds used for loan repayment would not be flowing through the commission's budget. The commission would merely be responsible for administering loan repayments. On page 2, lines 9 and 10, in reference to one's eligibility for the program, it states that an individual must have an unpaid balance of one or more education loans approved by the commission. Again, referring to the Alaska Commission on Post-Secondary Education. We changed the word from approved to verified, as reflected in the CS. So that it would not be read to mean that the commission was also the provider of these loans, which is not necessarily the case. Again, on page 2, line 12 through 14, in reference to the limit and calculation of the loan repayment, the CS reads that a loan repayment shall be in an amount not to exceed 33.3% of the unpaid loan balance existing in the first year of program participation. In the original bill, instead of in the first year of program participation, it had read in the first repayment year plus interest. We changed this because we want the calculation of loan repayment amounts to be based on the educational debt that an individual begins when they enter the program and not when they come out of school, because an individual could already be 1 or 2 years into their loan repayments when they enter the program. So we don't want to be giving participants money for amounts that they've already should have paid. On page 3, line 28, There was a simple technical correction. The line originally read, except as provided under AS 1443-435, and it was changed to properly reference AS 1443-430. The last change was on page 5, lines 20 through 22, which reads, the commissioner shall prioritize eligible sites based on the percentage of patients treated at the site who, one, are uninsured, two, have or are eligible for medical assistance or Medicare coverage, or three, have or are eligible for other federal health program benefits. The original bill had not included those who have or are eligible for other federal health program benefits, such as those with VA benefits or those who are covered under tribal benefits. And so we wanted them to be included in the commissioner's consideration of this preference. The original bill also based the prioritization of sites on the volume of these types of patients treated rather than the percentage. And we made this change so as not to give an advantage to the larger urban clinics because of their overall large numbers of patients, they might treat a larger volume than a smaller clinic, although a relatively small percentage, whereas a small clinic that treated a large percentage of these type of patients but naturally doesn't have large numbers to compete with a larger clinic based on the wording volume. So all of these changes were made in consultation with Tim Skirk of the Alaska Native Health Board and also Diane Behrens of the Alaska Commission on Post-Secondary Education. They do not change the overall purpose of the bill, nor do they address the issues that were brought up in the first committee hearing. But we have brought in a couple of I believe that Jay Butler of the Department of Health and Social Services is here to answer Senator Pascavan's questions. And he also provided you with some written explanation. And then Senator Dyson also had questions regarding how the initial 10 practitioners included in this program were chosen. And so we just asked Rod Beattie of the Alaska State Hospital and Nursing Home Association, who played a key role in outlining the program that's proposed in SB 139. Back to summarize why those 10 were included, and then of course we are available to take any questions.
Are there any questions? Senator Dyson.
Thank you. Maybe Rod will need to answer, but what is the definition of a clinical psychologist?
I believe Mr. Beattie could answer that probably better than I could.
Can we just wait till they call him up for testimony? Would that be okay?
Sure.
Any other question? Hearing no questions at this time, we'll start the public testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chairman.
Yes. Thank you. Dr. Butler, would you want to come forward?
He's online, Madam Chairman.
Hi, this is Jay Butler, Madam Chairman. I'm actually on the phone today.
Okay.
I'm with you today primarily to answer questions, but to address the issue raised by Kindred in response to Senator Pascavan's question during the last hearing. The administration is well aware of the public health challenge of maintaining an adequate healthcare workforce, and Senator Olson has very eloquently described that from the perspective of Western Alaska already today. However, we also want to recognize the work of the working group, which our department was involved in developing a plan to address the workforce issue through incentives. However, at this time, the administration opposes the bill primarily because it's a time where we've had to make some difficult decisions based on priorities. And the funding of this effort through GF creates a challenge at this point in time. I am pleased to say that there are other aspects of the budget that are designed to address, at least to some extent, some of the healthcare workforce challenges, such as the university budget, including money for the family practice residency program here in Alaska, which it may have been stated during earlier testimony, one of the most powerful predictors for where a physician will ultimately set up practice is where they complete their postgraduate medical residency training program. So we feel strongly that that is a very high priority. You may also be aware that a priority has been placed on providing funding for the Alaska Student Loan Corporation to make sure that student loans are available for students coming in at the undergraduate level, although I recognize this is not a program that specifically addresses the healthcare workforce issue. And I would be happy to take questions now or at any point during the hearing today.
All right, thank you. Any questions of Dr. Butler from the committee? I don't have any at this time. We also have Diane Barrett here in the audience. But you're just here to answer questions?
Yes, ma'am.
No statement you want to make?
No, thank you.
Okay. Rod Beatty?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Rod Beatty. I'm the President and CEO of the Alaska State Hospital and Nursing Home Association. I appreciate the opportunity to come back before you today to initially respond to Senator Dyson's question about how we got where we did with the 10 occupations. And there was a very large work group that we assembled to make those decisions and to try to create the skeletal outline of this proposed program. But we started with the 2007 vacancy study that was done by the University of Alaska to get a sense of where the vacancies were at and how significant they were in various regions of the state. We also look at the Physician Supply Task Force study from 2006, which I was a part of, and so was Dr. Butler, to get, a handle on the types of physicians that we needed and where those vacancies were at. And if you'll recall, we issued a report saying at the time we were about 300 physicians short in the state of Alaska to meet the needs of Alaskans' primary health care needs. Then we went back to our work group to try to sensitize that and vet it based on people's experiences, and many health organizations were represented as well as mental health representatives. And that ended up with the 10 occupations that are included in the proposal in front of you. Five of those we felt specifically addressed the behavioral health area, and those were the physician category occupation, which of course includes psychiatrists, and then the nurse practitioner, as well as psychologists, the clinical social worker, and then the physician assistant. Four of those, and this was important to us, have the ability to charge for the services that they deliver in their own right and get payment for that. So particularly since this is focused in rural areas, we wanted to be sure that we provided healthcare providers that could generate revenue for those locations and keep those entities financially sustainable as they provide these kinds of services. The physician assistant can't do that. They have to do that through a physician, but they can certainly provide services under the supervision of a physician and then have those services billed for. So that's how we got to where we were. We think it was a good starting point in terms of this discussion. Clearly, if there's changes that need to be made, our advisory committee wasn't, you know, wedded to just these 10, but we thought it was a good place to go forward from here and then make any modifications once the department went forward and had some further discussion on this, and the commissioner created the advisory committee that's called for here and got input from that advisory committee. I think a very strong part of this piece of legislation is that the advisory committee, once recommendations have been made, have to be accepted by the department. So this is driven by the advisory committee, unless the commissioner puts in writing reasons why he or she did not adopt those recommendations. So the idea was to have these folks from around the state who really understand the workforce needs be the ones who define where this program goes, subject to any appropriation that the legislature would make. With that, Madam Chair, those are my comments on how we defined who would be covered under this program. We still think it's extremely incredible to establish the program, to move forward. To me, it's a bank account. You can put money into it in a year that you feel that there's some funds available, and fully fund three-year commitments, you know, each year, so you're not obligating further or future legislators. Or you can choose not to if there's no funding available, but at least it gives us a vehicle to move forward. And I think we desperately need that if we're going to compete and get the clinicians we need here in the state over the next 10 to 15 years. I know that the department's in an awkward position right now, and I appreciate Dr. Butler. He's very helpful and a very strong proponent for health care in the state of Alaska. I don't really see the two things that were mentioned really doing much to help us with the size of the problem that we have in the rural areas, particularly in the hard-to-fill areas. And hospitals are interested in this because that's one of the things that we've been told by the citizenry we should be promoting, that we should be promoting workforce throughout the state in every community as a result, as I mentioned, of the survey that we took last year. So that's why we were a big supporter and one of the main movers of this particular proposal. And with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Senator Dyson, do you have further questions?
I haven't got my first one answered. Rod, thanks for your help on this. On the last page, page 6, line 15, what defines a clinical psychologist?
Madam Chair, Senator Dyson, my understanding is a clinical psychologist is one, of course, that's an advanced degree psychologist and also meets licensing requirements here in the state.
So it's a master's level plus state license.
I believe it could be PhD level as well. And I'm not totally, pardon me? I didn't mean to interrupt.
No.
I'm not totally clear on what level you have to be as far as the educational aspect of it. Maybe somebody else here could speak to that.
Yeah, and because that's the issue I raised last week. There are licensed clinical counselors here in the state who are certainly as well, if not more well-equipped to deal with behavioral issues than a licensed social worker. And I don't, so that, if that licensed, or that clinical psychologist doesn't include those master level state licensed people, I've got a problem. So I'd like to get that answered.
Madam Chair.
Do you have further question? Because yep. I think he's given his answer as far as we'll have to find somebody else to answer that.
Yeah, thank you.
I was looking back at the bill, and I guess that's all new language in there. Is it anybody from legal online? Did you ask somebody from legal to come over or to be online?
No.
Okay, we're going to go on with the testimony at this time. We'll come back to that.
I had one question of Mr. Beattie.
I'm sorry. Yes.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Is your organization, in the spirit of cooperation, willing to approach their membership in some sort of participation of a match of some of the grants that would made, or the repayment of loans, or the payment of direct incentives?
Madam Chair, Senator Thomas, I haven't put that before the members, but I just would add that this isn't intending to help hospitals, except maybe some of the smallest communities who also don't have the deep pockets to go after these kinds of clinicians. What we want to do is see that others have a fair opportunity to compete nationally to bring in additional clinicians. In your own community, Senator, last year, it's my understanding that the hospital brought in 27 physicians. But again, they have the ability to do that, and they have a clinic, obviously, that they're co-located with that serves people in Fairbanks. And there's ways for them to recover that investment and help those physicians to get established. But these small, rural, and very remote locations do not. And that's our interest, is to help them get where they need to be and be able to provide the care at those levels rather than have those patients have to travel to bigger communities to receive care. But given what I just said about what they're already investing and what we're paying towards the university's expanded nursing program, I don't know that they would be in a position to do any more than that.
Thank you.
Any further questions? If not, thank you. There's somebody from Alaska Native Health Board, first name Tim. Rather than me call the last name, I'm going to ask you to pronounce it for me if you're there. Alaska Native Health Board?
Tim
Sure. Are you there, Tim? Shirley Hughes?
Yes. I'm here.
Would you like to testify?
I'm online to answer questions about the difference between this proposal, loan repayment incentives, compared to other support for service program types that are out there being considered. I don't know if the chart that I created was provided to the committee.
I don't have a copy of a chart. Maybe the sponsor has it. I don't see it.
I can just briefly summarize the point because there are...
Hold on just a minute, Shirley. I guess we do have something before me. I didn't know that you were referring. It says, why a loan payment and incentive program is better than other support for service program types?
Yes, Madam Chair.
That's what you were... Everybody have a copy of that?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. If you've... Is there anything in particular that you want to point out about what you have here, rather than wait for a question to be asked?
Can you hear me?
We do.
Okay, I'm having trouble hearing you. This is Shelley Hughes, for the record, Government Affairs Director with the Office of Primary Care Association. Madam Chair, can you repeat what you just said? I was having trouble hearing.
We do have the chart in front of us.
Okay.
I wondered if you had any overall statement that you wanted to make about this.
Yes, thank you very much. I just want to point out that there are a number of proposals floating around, and they all have good intentions in trying to meet the workforce shortage need. But I wanted to point out that this particular proposal, of course, a lot of study went into it about what works and doesn't work. And the chart clearly shows how this is better for the state as far as being cost-effective and result-producing. It doesn't put the state at risk of loan defaults, as an example, because the state is not the doesn't hold the loan, doesn't carry the paper on the loan, and it's less administration because there is not there's not the need to track the person from their time as a student all the way through to their time working in the field. So I can answer any questions about the chart. I don't know that if you want me to review it point by point, I can, but it's pretty self-explanatory.
No, you don't have to do that, and I'll check to see if there's any questions at this time. Is there anybody that have a question on this particular piece? Is Tim there? Pat Luby?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. Members of the committee, my name is Pat Luby. I'm the Advocacy Director for AARP in Alaska. Senator Rolls and the sponsor of the bill spoke passionately as a physician about the problems that he's seen with the shortage of health professionals in Western Alaska. Just purely from the consumer standpoint, AARP would like to indicate our strong support for Senate Bill 139. It's our members of the general public who suffer because we cannot find enough health professionals. We compete with every other state. We're not in competition because we don't have programs like loan repayment and incentives. And we will always be behind the eight ball in trying to recruit unless we can pass some legislation like SB 139. AARP is in strong support. We encourage you to vote aye on this bill. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Is there anyone in the audience that want to testify to 139? To the sponsor of the bill, we do have Jean Michelle on the phone now. Did you want to have her address the question that Senator Dyson has asked?
Yes, Senator Olson here again, if she is on the line and knows the answer to the question, I would like her to go ahead and address the question that Senator Dyson had.
Jean Michelle, are you there?
Yes, I am.
And did you understand what the question was?
No, I
No, I apologize, I wasn't on.
The term clinical psychologist is in the bill on page 5 and page 6. Senator Dyson wants to know the qualifications of that person. No one here has been able to answer that. I don't know if that's something you would have got an answer to before you finished the draft.
Okay. Senator Dyson, through the chair, I looked at the Board of Psychology credentialing, and they don't specifically license psychologists by type, but they do require certain degrees before they issue a license to a psychologist, and one of those is a degree in clinical psychology. So that, in my opinion, would be, unless we defined it otherwise, would be the definition of, that would apply here.
Do you know if it's at a master's level or above?
Oh, in terms of the degree itself?
Yes.
I'll have to look that up.
Actually, Madam Chairman?
Yes.
We did place a call into the Division of Occupational Licensing, and Ms. Caesar has the answer to the question.
Okay. Thank you very much. Did you hear that, G. Michelle?
Yes, thank you.
Okay, thanks.
This is Kendry Caesar, staff to Senator Olson, through the chair. Senator Dyson, I was told that to be licensed in clinical psychology for a statewide license, it would require a doctoral level degree. And a master's degree wouldn't qualify him for clinical as a clinical psychologist, but rather either as a professional counselor or a psychology psychologist associate.
Yeah. Thank you.
Senator Dyson.
Yeah. So I'm disappointed that the committee substitute doesn't deal with the question I raised, and I think that's quite unfortunate. And master's level psychologists, clinical psychology students here clarify for both third-party payments, Medicaid, and they qualify for a state license. And to not include them, but include social workers in the behavioral sciences seems to me to be unwise and unjust. Yeah. And I'm sorry that that didn't get taken care of in either the original bill or the committee substitute. That's all.
You said that you spoke to what individual was it that you spoke to?
It was the person from the Division of Occupational Licensing. Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Well, I suppose you know what you're saying, and it's true. We do have clinical psychologists associates. I know we do have that. You're saying we also have them at another title other than that?
Yeah, it's. I know it's marriage and family counselors.
Yes.
And there's another one. And I've forgotten it, but it's a master's level with a degree in clinical psychology, master's degree in clinical psychology, and they are recognized both by the state, Medicaid, and almost all insurance programs.
Okay, would you want to address that?
Madam Chairman, the way we came up with the types of health care providers was from the commission that was addressing the shortage, and that's where we got the list from, and Rod Beatty's here to go, since he was on the commission, he is here to go ahead and explain what was there and how they came to the conclusion, if you'd like to hear from him.
So pretty much the people that are listed on the list, you're saying have the highest shortage. Is that correct?
The list came from the commission that Rod Beatty was a part of, and that's where we got the health care providers from that list.
Mr. Beatty, would you come back up? Which group are you talking about? That you own a lot of groups, so I'm not really sure which group you're referring to.
Madam Chair, Rod Beatty, President and CEO of the Alaska State Hospital and Nursing Home Association. The group that we're referring to is the group that came together as an ad hoc work group to create the outline of this legislation.
Okay.
and that was contained in one of the handouts that was provided. Right. It's a fairly extensive group of interested parties. And again, to this specific question, that never came up during our discussion, Senator Dyson, as an area that we should consider in lieu of or in addition to the 10. And 10 wasn't particularly a hard and fast number. Those were the ones that we could really make a strong case for and felt we were representing across the whole spectrum the different needs that the state has. I don't have any particular difficulty with adding another occupation if we could frame it to your satisfaction. We weren't suggesting that the line was drawn in the sand and that was the end of the discussion. It's just that we wanted to put something in front of you that we thought made sense and did the best job it could to represent the whole state across all the occupations, because there's 10 of them there, obviously, 9 each at a full funding level, so that'd be 90 individuals a year that it would fund. And if we want to go beyond that, I think it's just juggling the numbers to make the budget work and to define who that 11th group would be.
Any further?
Well, yeah, I'm not prepared with an amendment today, but I certainly could get one prepared by Wednesday.
Or it could be considered at another level rather than here, but since it has to do with health social service. If the sponsor of the bill and all agree that they want to add another group in there, and you named out several folks, so I'm not really sure which one you want to add.
Yeah, there's two other licensed boards. I know one of them is marriage and family counseling, and the other one I've forgotten. I think it's behavioral counseling or something. But they are the hundreds of licensed counselors that are out there working in drug rehab, residential programs for children, alcohol rehabilitation programs and so on.
I don't doubt that we don't have that. I know that we do. What my concern is there a shortage in those areas? Because the list that they have is saying these are critical positions and we have a shortage there. Would you be able to verify that the names that you are calling off now would have to do that? And I don't know what we have to do to find that out, but there must be some way to do that rather than just put an amendment in there and not verifying that there is a shortage.
Yeah, so back to Rod. So when you guys were doing your research, was I assumed that it was workers who were working in mental health and behavioral mod jobs that we were short of. Am I wrong?
Through the chair, Senator Dyson, we were working with the organizations that represent people who work in that area regularly. So we had every tribal organization there. We had the Mental Health Trust there. We had primary care level organizations there. We had the state health planning and systems development people there. So those who have really crisp knowledge of what the data shows to be the workforce shortage across the state, whether it's behavioral health, primary care, whatever, we didn't have line workers present that actually do behavioral health kind of therapy or treatment. But we certainly had people there who understood the need in the state and where that need was most critical.
Maybe.
That I can get that information.
Well, there's somebody that probably can get that information. I'm going to go back now and see if there's anybody at any of the LROs that's there to testify, anybody on phone to testify on Senate Bill 139. Hear none. I have completed my list of people that signed up to testify. I guess I'll have the sponsor of the bill to come back, and if you have any closing statements that you want to give or suggestions that you should make for changes in the bill. While you're coming back, I do want to say to the committee, I see the urgent need for such a bill as this. I know that the money has been stated as a problem, but I don't see where the money should be allowed to stop this bill from going forward, because you could zero all the money out of there and still have the shell there saying this is what we're going to do, and when we come up with these monies, it would be appropriated. You might also be looking for private donations and all kinds of ways that we could come up with the money. But I don't think we should just say that, and I'm sorry that the department didn't think enough to say, we like the concept, we think it should happen, and also make that suggestion that maybe we should look at it if we can't come up with the money. But I think that should be decided in finance, what the amount of money should be to go in it. It's not our job here in Health and Social Services to do that. My committee looks at things that's needed for Health and Social Services, and I see it's much needed, and I would like to see it go forward. I don't know where the other committee members stand on that, but I guess I'll give you time to make a statement or say if you approve or don't approve.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Nothing can act more immediate right now than for us to go ahead and attract these highly qualified health care providers to the state of Alaska, where they are to fill the hard to find or the rural areas or places that are underserved. This is the most immediate way. It's more immediate than increasing the medical school class. It's more immediate than getting more spots in the residency program. This, as soon as it goes into effect, can immediately start drawing people to this area. As far as what Senator Dyson wants to go ahead and do to the bill, I have no problem with adding to the bill. The only difficulty that I see is that the fiscal note may be enlarged, and since the department has some, or the administration has some reservations related to the fiscal note, that needs to be kept in mind as well. But I don't see anything more immediate than putting this bill on the table to start bringing these people to our state.
All right, thanks. Any comments from the committee? Senator Ellis.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I appreciate the Senator bringing the bill before our committee. Alaska, without a doubt, is behind the curve compared to other states in this regard. And I've been, was a big supporter of doubling the WAMI program, and said to our colleagues, let's not give ourselves, when we pass this bill, too big a pat on the back, because we're way behind what we should have done. We should have tripled the WAMI class about 8 or 9 years ago to have even hoped to come up. And I agree that this is the hope for having an immediate effect on things. I was a big supporter of the residency program expansions, and there's more to be done there in family practice. But I agree with the sponsor that this is the most immediate effect we can, and Alaska's behind in getting something like this in place. So I'm a big supporter and hope that we can move the bill along at the right moment, whenever the chair decides is the right moment. I'll be supportive.
Well, with your approval, you said you have no problem with Senator Dyson's suggestion that we add in that one other category. I would not like to add both of those categories if they're not needed, but one of them might be, could be added to the bill. We could easily find out if that, the qualifications for that person, and if we find out if it fits there, then it would go. If not, it won't. Senator Dyson?
Yeah, if I may ask a question of the sponsor.
Yes, you may.
Senator Olson, where does this bill go next?
Finance.
All right. If you will agree, if I come up with the right information and a justification, if there's a shortage of these other folks, if you'll agree to support that amendment in finance, if I can come up with the information, then I'll be glad for the committee to move out of committee today.
All right. Thank you.
Senator Dyson, just on one condition, as long as it's okay with the rest of the other committee members, since the amendment actually was from here, is that agreeable, Madam Chairman?
Well, I can't speak for all the members. I don't think they have a problem with that. It's just the idea of finding out if that is really needed, and that's what you're saying. If it's deemed that it is needed, would you have an objection for it to come in there? And then I'm not asking you to tell him that you have to vote for it. I don't think you have to do that, but if he wants that for us to move the bill, that's up to you, to between the two of you.
Sure, and I'd be glad.
I'm not going to tie the hands of my members to say that it has to be done that way.
And I'd be glad to go ahead and do that.
All right.
Madam.
Senator Passman.
you know, I would be in support of potentially adding to it, because I'm sure there's more than 10 positions that have a need out there. I don't know whether this is number 24 and 25, you know, but certainly, you know, the ad hoc committee to some extent we're relying upon. But anyway, I'm in favor of the bill, and I'm in favor of the immediacy of getting these critical needed health care providers into the rural areas as quickly as possible. But if there's a number 11 that we can add, I'd be in favor of, you know, doing that. But I just, on the priority, I don't know whether Senator Dyson's is number 25 or number 11. So that's
okay. Thank you. Here are no other comments. I'd like to have an amendment, a motion to move this bill to finance.
Madam Chair, I would move that we move CS for Senate Bill 139 from HSS to the Committee of Next Referral with individual recommendations with attached fiscal note.
Oops. We have no objection, so done, and we'll just take a brief at ease to sign. Senator Mr. Obermeyer from my office is going to give an overview of the bill.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm Tom Obermeyer, aide to Senator Davis. The bill before you is Senate Bill 27. You have the committee substitute, a version E, as an echo, which was presented and I believe adopted at the last hearing on this bill. This bill provides waivers of tuition and fees combined with other assistance to help foster or out-of-home care children enjoy the opportunity and benefits of higher education afforded to others. I believe you heard last time that the University of Alaska has increased from 5 to 10 students statewide who were in foster care for tuition waivers, but that's not nearly enough. This bill attempts to provide many more people allow more foster care kids to go to college. It changes or extends court orders to age 21 for a child committed to the custody in the department. It significantly changes foster care to out-of-home care for purposes of the transition to independent living program, and also adds a monetary stipend for children in the transition program for a specified period of time, up to 1 year. In the past, these youth who aged out of foster care were given financial assistance for housing up to 2 months, but this would extend it up to 1 year. Those are the primary new provisions of this bill that assist the kids in foster care that have tremendous problems obtaining college degrees or even completing their basic education program. If you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Are there any questions from committee members at this time?
Madam Chair.
Yes, Senator Dyson.
I'm not finding my fiscal note in my package. Do you have
do
one?
You? We'll take a brief at ease. We do have the fiscal note in front of us. And there's somebody from the department present. Is there anybody online or here in the audience to speak to Senate Bill 27? Hearing none, we'll go to the division.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and committee members. For the record, my name is Mike Lessman. I'm the Community Relations Manager and Legislative Contact for the Office of Children's Services, Department of Health and Social Services. Madam Chair, regarding the Department of Health and Social Services fiscal notes, there are three that the committee members should have. Essentially, three components of the OCS budget would be impacted by the CS for Senate Bill 27. On one hand, the legislation would extend the age to which the department may keep a child in state custody to age 21, and that would mean that we would be paying foster care rates or rates to other providers for an additional year for some of those youth. Another financial impact to the Office of Children's Services is found within section, I believe it is, Madam Chair, section 12, a provision of the bill that provides for a monetary living expense stipend. Mm-hmm. And so that's a fiscal impact to the department. And then also, our state automated child welfare information system, or what we affectionately refer to as ORCA, would require some programming changes. There are logic models within the ORCA system that rely on age criteria and age eligibility, and so there are some programming changes that would have to happen in ORCA.
Could you tell me if that's included in the second note that's from the OCS? Is that where it is located in there?
Madam Chair, the ORCA fiscal note would be under a component number of 2666. It's the Children's Services RDU and component number 2666.
$204.2, right?
Through the chair, Senator Thomas, that's correct. 200.
Okay.
Yeah.
We have that. Is there someone else to speak to the other notes other than you? Or can you just go through all of them? I see three signed by Sandoval.
Madam Chair, I can speak to all of the Health and Social Services Office of Children's Services fiscal notes.
Okay.
Do you or the committee members have specific questions, or do you want me to give a bit more detail about how we came to these numbers?
I see the write-ups here, and I don't know if they have any questions. I'll call on the committee to see if they do. If not, you might just give an overall what you have here.
Sure. Madam Chair, maybe this would be helpful to yourself and the committee members. This is new territory for the Office of Children's Services, the idea of extending custody out one more year, and the idea of providing a stipend to youth once they leave care. That's brand new territory for us. We looked at some numbers of youth that were adjudicated to stay in custody beyond their 18th birthday and into their 19th and even 20th year of age. But frankly, Madam Chair, this is our best guess. These numbers reflect our best guess of some brand new territory for us.
And I could appreciate that. Are there any questions about the physical note while we're on that? And if not, we can just move on from that. Do you have any other comments to be made about 27?
No, Madam Chair.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
We've had this bill before us on...
Excuse me, Madam Chair.
Yes.
Senator, if I may ask, Mike, are you free to tell us what the department's position is on this bill at this time?
Through the chair, Senator Dyson, the position of the department is one of a neutral position.
And if I understand the fiscal notes, it's maybe $2.5 million a year is your best guess in this new territory that we might be sending you off to explore.
Through the chair, Senator Dyson, I think you're a quicker mathematician than I am.
I don't see that.
In fiscal year 2010, for the monetary stipend portion of the bill, that alone is nearly a $5 million, or excuse me, $5 million note.
Okay.
The foster care base rate fiscal note, where we'd be paying providers to care for youth that additional year, $725,000 in FY 2010.
Yes. So
and then
5.
Yeah.
All right.
That complete your question?
Yes, ma'am. Thank you.
Yes. Any other questions come before us? The one thing that you need to think of, the money that we have here in the physical note we are going to be spending that money in a lot of ways other than in a real positive manner, because this is going to assist youngsters to help them stay in school or enter into school once finished high school, go out and get jobs, train for vocational jobs. They need this kind of assistance. It works in other states, and I know it will work for us. And I know what you have in here is a note. Those numbers not necessarily the numbers that we would be serving, because all of these youngsters are not going to come and participate in this program right away at the numbers that you have said in here. So that's something that they could work out in finance. But if there is any concerns from a social service help perspective, I'd like to know that, and I don't hear you saying anything. The note is big, but I don't hear any other objections from you.
Madam Chair, the premise of the department's neutral position is really a simple matter of priorities. I believe, if not on this bill, prior, perhaps your Senate Bill 105, you might have heard me say that just recently the state of Alaska got its results back from the Federal Child and Family Services Review. And a lot of the focus, if not the majority of the focus, the federal government is telling our state's child protection system to look at is really on the front end of the child protective services system, on the front end of the foster care system. We need to work on the timeliness of our investigations. We need to work on keeping children safely in their own homes, if that's at all possible. If it's not and we must remove them and adjudicate them in court as children in need of aid, we need to get them reunified as quickly as possible. We've got more home visits to do. And so the division and the department's focus and priority right now is on a different end of the system, and it's just a matter of how we spend our resources, how we spend our staff energy, and where we first look to improve.
Yeah, I can appreciate your comments. And Senator Dyson, I think I see your hand over there.
Yeah, I would enjoy seeing a copy of that, of the latest federal review. I suspect my colleagues would as well.
Senator Dyson, we've already asked for that, and they are scheduled to come before the committee. I don't know the date offhand, but it's already been scheduled. You mean the audit?
Yes, ma'am.
Is that what you respond? So you will get it. Okay.
Yeah, and I would enjoy having it before we have the presentation.
Okay. Did you hear that? Okay.
Through the chair, Senator Dyson, I can definitely make that happen for you. And the final report has been posted to the OCS website, but I'll be happy to also deliver it to you in other ways.
Yeah, I can probably find it.
All right, thank you very much. Any other comments? If not, I'm looking for an amendment, a motion to move Senate Bill 27 to finance.
Madam Chair, I would move that the CS for Senate Bill 27 be moved from this committee with individual recommendations and attached, I believe, three fiscal notes.
And thank you. In objection? Hear none, we will pass it out. Thank you. That complete the agenda, except we have that grievance on there, but we don't have enough time to really go into it. So we're not going to hear it unless you just want to have an overview of it. And
what's that, 66?
The grievance, yes. We've been trying to get it out of here, so
yeah.
It's going to be the first thing up the next time we meet, I guess.
We've got this room till 3:30, don't we?
Three. Basketball games.
No,
3:30.
The 3 o'clock. We got 15 minutes. So I think we'll just adjourn.
I have to go regardless, but you
yes,
guys
can. I think we'll just adjourn on it. But I would like for you to be sure to read your package real good on that grievance, because we might spend quite a considerable amount of time on that one.